And one of the great things and the biggest assets that you have in our business is that you're able to develop a rapport with everybody in the legal system, and you have to have confidence in them. And that's one of the big pluses that we've had in Rutherford County. And it's always been known that it's second to none when it comes to safety and performance inside the community.
Well, there's no piece of the system that's bigger than another. And obviously, there are strong personalities in all facets. But if you're dedicated to seeing that the system works the way it's supposed to, you have to learn to get along with people. And you have to learn to make accommodations. And I agree 100% with you. I think the district attorney's office, the judges, the law enforcement community, for the most part, we've always been able to get along with each other.
And that is such an important part. But before we get any further, let me cough a little bit. I did want to mention that you guys took a big trip just recently, and I don't know if you were involved in a tournament or not, but I heard the catch was big down in Louisiana.
It was. We went to Venice. I think there were 9 of us went fishing for redfish and speckled trout. Mm-hmm. Filled up the coolers and brought home a lot of fish. We had a big time. It was great fishing, great weather. And this was my 3rd time down there, and I'm looking forward to going back again.
Now, what do you use to fish with down there? Are you kind of out in these little boats in the canals and the bayou, or what do you guys do?
Well, it's really not like the swamp people.
You don't use your oar to hit them with?
No, we don't have to fight any alligators, but... for the most part, this time we were just off the Mississippi River in bays. Mm-hmm. Open water for the most part. We did on a couple of occasions go back up into some what I call skinny water, where there were a lot of reeds and little narrow boat paths. But for the most part, we're in open water. We're using plastic like grubs or swim baits to mm-hmm. fish with. You can fish with shrimp. Dead shrimp or live shrimp, but the fishing, I believe you could throw anything out there and they would bite. I can assure you that skill is not necessary to go down there and catch some fish.
Well, now Steve Daniels is telling me different than that. He said there was an awful lot of skill in it.
Well, you know, Judge Daniel thinks a lot of himself, but I can assure you that... other than not hitting your neighbor in the head with the fishing pole, that was about all you had to do.
Well, we've got a caller on the line already, General, so we got to put our earphones on.
Okay.
And caller, welcome aboard with Attorney General Bill Weitzel.
Well, Mr. Attorney, this is Mike Lorenz, and I just thought I'm glad you have finally learned something from reading my column, and I'd like to wish you and your cohort over there a very Merry Christmas. I'm delighted to know both of you.
You too, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that.
You know, if you learn from anybody, it would have to be from Mike.
Yeah.
He is the number one fisherman in this area, by far. And a Merry Christmas to you too, Mike.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir. Now, you are good at throwing out bait using different types of lure, and I'm not talking about in the water or on the pond. You're one of the best I've ever seen at interrogating witnesses that are in court. I mean, I can just sit. I used to love to watch you. It was better than watching any other than maybe To Kill a Mockingbird. watch an attorney get up there and use his expertise to get to a particular end. And it seems like it comes natural to you.
Well, I think to some degree it does, but Guy Dotson taught me a long time ago, you need to know what you're looking for, know where you're going, have a plan, and be prepared. And certainly having knowledge of the case is critical. The one thing that maybe a lot of people don't realize is the state has to turn over its list of witnesses so the defense knows generally who we're going to call. The defendant is not obligated to do that, so a lot of times we have witnesses that we may not know much about or may not even know they're going to testify. So a lot of times we have to do a lot of running around to find out something about that person. But I agree with you. It's something that comes naturally. And I've also found this out. If you don't know what you're going to do, the best thing to do is to do nothing. Because sometimes you just have to take what the witness says, let it stand if you can't refute it, and then argue around it later in the case, which is better than going in there and messing the thing up. The old adage is, don't ever ask a question you don't know the answer to. For the most part, that's true, but every now and then you'll gamble a little bit.
Well, is it kind of like building a house? You start with the foundation, and then you go step by step by step as you try to make it where the jury can understand exactly which direction you're going.
That's a good analogy, and it is like building a house, and I want the witness to help me build the house. Mm-hmm. And when it's over with, I want the witness to be the one that's painted in the corner. You close off all the avenues of escape so that there's only one answer that witness can give. And when he does, you've impeached that witness.
Now, when you've got a capital case, which you have had an awful lot of capital cases in the last 5 to 10 years, as many as I've ever seen. Of course, there are new cases, old cases. There's a whole lot of things that are involved in establishing those cases. But is it key for you as an attorney general to be able to get the defendant on the witness stand? Because a lot of times I have seen you completely change stories of defendants while they're up there in the direction that they're going to go. Is that usually a major plus for the district attorney's office to have the actual defendant in the stand?
Well, that can vary, but I'll have to say this. When I anticipate that a defendant will testify, it certainly intensifies the trial. And it's something that I kind of look forward to. It's a challenge, and I want to be up to that challenge. And it becomes personal. There's no question about it. I want to be better than that defendant. And so, therefore, I have to know that defendant. I have to know the facts of the case, and it's important. And I believe the facts are the truth, and if I know the facts and the truth, and I feel like I have an advantage because I believe that defendant's going to have to tell a lie. And I've always said, if you can show that a person is lying, then that sometimes is better than all the facts of the case, because then they have to say, why would a person lie? And so when I cross-examine a defendant, that's what I set out to do, to show that what they're telling the jury is not the truth.
I have seen the adrenaline to get started when you're up there. And sometimes I can, you know, if you know someone well enough, you can see that little click goes on in the eyes and they light up. You know something is about to happen. I've seen it so many times.
Well, I have actually experienced this and didn't realize it at the time, but I have actually experienced tunnel vision while at the podium, and all I see in front of me is that defendant, and the entire courtroom is, I don't see it. I'm not conscious of it. I'm concentrating strictly on that person.
You never lose your focus, and you never do. But the one thing that that almost everybody kind of senses in a courtroom is that you're going along on a smooth, even road. You're laying out all the testimony and all the evidence as you go along. Is there a certain little place somewhere in the road that you're going to spring the trap? Because it seems like that's a normal way of doing things.
Well, it is, but I'll tell you this. Every trial that I've ever been involved in, there is always something that happens that you don't expect. Mm-hmm. You can talk to witnesses over and over and over and prepare for that trial, and you get in there, and I don't know what it is about the witness stand, but it literally changes a person. They either become fearful, they'll freeze up, or they'll get up there and decide that this is their stage and their 15 minutes of fame. So there's always something that happens that's unexpected, and you have to be aware that's going to happen, and you have to understand that dynamic and not let that throw you off of what your plan and theory of the case is about. But in that regard, a lot of times the things that you don't expect are things that turn out to be to your advantage. Something so outlandish may happen that you didn't expect, that you can seize on that and maybe discredit this witness, or maybe punch a hole in the defendant's theory of the case.
Sometimes law enforcement officers are a lot of times key witnesses in capital cases, and because they're considered expert witnesses all the way through the line, and you have to work with them. It's almost like putting a director putting a movie together. You go over and over and over and make sure that they have all of their information correct, and they're going to be able to relate it to the jury. When that doesn't go right, and to me that would be a very difficult thing to overcome, how are you able to circumvent the situation there when you've got someone who is not really as prepared as they were supposed to be?
I would say, Truman, that what I try to do is get their attention.
Yeah, I've seen you do that.
And a lot of people, as I said, when they get on the witness stand, their mouth's working, but their brain becomes disengaged. Mm-hmm. So you have to get their brain and their mouth hooked up again, and you do that by asking a series of pretty simple questions and get them back to where they need to be. And that happens a lot. But you're right, it is. You do a lot of preparation. Really, in the last few years, maybe more so than ever before, I really like to have the key law enforcement officer, investigator in the case. I like to start them early on. Mm-hmm. And as we prepare for that trial, I like to have them in the office every day. Paul Newman does this better than anyone I've ever been around. But we will actually have that officer there as we prepare the case, mm-hmm. as we go through the evidence, the photographs, as we interview other witnesses. Because you never know when you're going to come up with another piece of information that you need to look into further. And you think you know your case, but until you get ready to go to the courtroom, you're always learning more and more and more about it. And so that's why we think it's important to have that investigator there to be a partner, really, with us in getting the case ready to go to trial. And then when we're in the courtroom, that officer's there, and he's an important part of the team. And he is a big part of assisting us with presenting the case in court.
Would it be important to get your key witnesses, like your law enforcement officers, through early? Because, as everybody knows, it's nerve-wracking to be sitting in that witness seat. It really is. And you go over and over in your mind, have I got this right? Have I got that mm-hmm. right? I mean, am I going to answer this question correctly? Or what kind of pitfalls am I going to run into? And I think sometimes a lot of the witnesses will rehash it too many times because they're so afraid mm-hmm. of making a mistake.
That's very true. And a lot of times, and particularly law enforcement officers, well, what are you going to ask me? What are you going to ask me? And I said, I cannot give you a script because I don't know, this is a fluid situation. And I remind them, think about what you've done and tell the truth. That's all you need to worry about. A lot of times a witness will try to anticipate what they think you want them to say. Mm-hmm. And I try to tell the officers or any witness, don't worry about me and what I'm looking for. All I'm looking for is for you to tell the truth. I know where I'm going. If you'll just follow along with me, we'll get through your testimony just fine and get the evidence and the facts we need in. And in doing that, I try to reassure them and also get them to kind of calm down mm-hmm. and really take the responsibility off of them. And if they will just know their case and prepare, they won't have any problems whatsoever.
Well, you got two kinds of law enforcement witnesses. You have the ones that do what they're supposed to. They answer the question directly, mm-hmm. either yes or no mm-hmm. or whatever. And that way you have complete control over where their statement's going to go. And then again, you have the ones that become long-winded and really cannot find an end for where they're wanting to go. And then you got troubles, haven't you?
Right. When I ask somebody what day it was, mm-hmm. that's the answer I want. I don't need to know that it was cloudy and the wind was out of the east at 15 miles an hour and, the Christmas decorations were being put up on the square. I need to know what day it was. And when you get I love a long-winded witness. Because they're up there
on the other side.
Yes, and they're performing, and they're going to say something that's not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you'll pick up on that inaccuracy, and when you do, you kick the stool right out from under them, and they're lost the rest of their testimony. So that's one thing. When I'm doing direct examination of an officer or any witness, I say, answer the question that I ask. If I need to know something, I'll get around to asking you. Don't volunteer a whole lot of information.
You know, there's no rush to judgment in any of your cases. I mean, we can go back a long time when you first started. And a lot of times public sentiment will want you to go ahead. We know he's guilty. Go ahead, get him in the courtroom. Let's get him sentenced and send him to Old Sparky in Nashville. And you and I know you cannot do business that way. And I know of no case in Rutherford County, especially in any case, but in capital cases, everything is checked, rechecked, and to make sure that all this information is correct and we actually have the right defendant sitting in that chair. Waiting to be tried. I have never seen it go beyond that, and you guys just, and it's been proven to be workable, and one of the biggest things that I think that we've seen over the last 20 years is going back to the Cole case, where we could have taken those people to court many years ago, but there's a good chance that we would have lost that and never had another chance at them.
That's the thing. You get one shot, and if you're not successful, that's the end of it. And I'll say this, one of my biggest fears is not that a guilty person would be found not guilty and go free, but I would hate to think about someone who was not guilty being convicted and go to prison because of something that I didn't do to make sure that we proceed in the right way. I certainly, as I sit here today, don't feel that that's happened. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of that happening in any of the cases that either I was a part of as an assistant in Mr. Dotson's office or as a district attorney. And that would be something that would be difficult to live with if you knew you had done someone wrong intentionally in particular. I realize anybody can make a mistake, but I just don't believe that's happened here.
In fact, I'm almost 100% sure it was has not happened here, because I can remember us going to talk to you. We've talked to Guy in the past. We've gathered all the information. We've gone over it. Do we have enough to prove beyond any doubt whatsoever that this individual actually committed the crime? And unfortunately, years ago, we did not have the technology, the DNA, and all the other things that have come to play now, and we had to delay those things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we would not all be on the same page. You know, we felt like maybe we had, but we didn't realize how far technology was going to come to its present day benefit. And I constantly marvel at the decisions that both you and Guy have made that have come true as far as ending up in a positive way in the courtroom.
Well, one of the things that I would say that I'm most proud of, and I give you a lot of credit for this, is that we do have we have had some cold cases that we have been successful in prosecuting, and it's really a team effort with the detectives that have worked those cases. And in the Gilly case, for instance, in particular, we spent years before we ever went to trial with that case in getting it in the condition it needed to be to know that we would have our best chance.
Let's come back to that one, because that's an extremely important case, because it's kind of like the bellwether. I mean, it really is. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Attorney General Bill Weitzel.
Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes, and we're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. Everybody here knows what's going on.
That's Randy Bolin at Murfreesboro Outdoors.
We got clothing, camouflage from top to bottom. Shotguns, shells, boots, pretty much anything. We got it.
Remember Murfreesboro Outdoors for that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list.
We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Park.
Technology can be confusing, but it's our passion.
You know, I knew enough information to be dangerous myself, but just wanted an expert opinion, you know, somebody that knew that was really into the technology and up on all the terminology and that sort of thing.
The Tech Life, helping you buy, set up, and use technology online at thetechlife.net.
Looking for a really smart gift for your child or grandchild this holiday? Something that won't break or need batteries? Try the Tennessee Department of Treasury's new Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program. If you open a Tennessee Stars account with at least $50 by December 31st, 2012, you get a one-time $50 match from the state. Roll over your entire balance from another college savings plan and receive $100 in your Tennessee Stars account. To learn about the Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program, its investment objectives, risks, and costs, read the official statement available at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free 855-386-7827. Check with your home state to learn if it offers tax or other benefits for investing in its own 529 plan. Tennessee Stars is the holiday gift that keeps on giving for a lifetime. Visit www.tnstars.com or call toll-free 855-386-7827 and open your account today.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hot Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pests.
AmeriCare Services Incorporated, family-owned and operated for residential and commercial customers, we offer a full range of services. Our services include one-time, monthly, and quarterly pest control, termite control, moisture and fungus control, automatic foundation vents, and more. Licensed, insured, and bonded for your protection. 893-7111.
Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
AmeriCare Services Incorporated.
WGNS.
Let's check those Good Neighbor events. There are new hours at the Social Security office here in Murfreesboro. They're open Monday through Fridays from 9 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. Those are the new hours at the Social Security office right here in town. Toys, clothing, and books for Rutherford County's foster children are are being collected now through December the 14th at Ford of Murfreesboro. If you have questions, call Susan Woolsey at Ford of Murfreesboro. The number is 893-4121. The Foster Children's Christmas continues through December the 14th at Ford of Murfreesboro. And on cold mornings, an electric heater can take the edge off. But many senior citizens on fixed incomes can't afford an electric heater. If you need one, call Dwight Ogleton at the Warm Mornings for the Elderly. His number is 818-2459. And volunteers are needed to drive vans and take veterans to medical appointments. If you'd like to volunteer, get with Darlene Haynes at 255-6517. Those are Good Neighbor events.
You had an accident and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? Affordable liability insurance from Safe Auto. For not a lot of money, you can protect yourself from your own mistakes. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO now. Drive safe, spend less, Safe Auto.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Have devastating floods or storms affected you and your family? HRA Home Improvement is just a phone call away. HRA Home Improvement can handle just about any of your building needs. HRA Home Improvement is a local company with a mission to do the job right the first time, every time. Call your local general contractor, HRA Home Improvement Company, at 615-410-7924. Again, that number is 615-410-7924.
Quality products, outstanding service, friendly employees, all are essential to a successful business. But there are also invisible products every business must have, like honesty, dependability, and customer trust. Customer loyalty is earned when businesses take the time to learn from their customers. Our BBB accredited businesses make this pledge. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
Weather Eye.
See a slight chance for a spotty shower in our forecast. Otherwise, expect cloudy conditions with afternoon highs in the mid-60s. And we could have more rain tonight with lows of 49. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sam Dunaisty. Right now, it's 50 degrees.
We want to say congratulations to our good neighbor of the day, Mr. Dean, Murfreesboro City Schools bus driver, bus number 568. Someone wrote in and says he's always positive and encouraging to the kids, so we're sending him flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts as our good neighbor of the day. And happy 7th birthday to Maya Haynes. She receives the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Attorney General Bill Weitzel. And this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639, online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639. At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. You know, Bill, when we're talking about the Kyle Gilley case, I never will forget, we opened and reopened that case probably four or five times at least over all of those years. And it's one of those things, you didn't want the trail to get cold, but sometimes it's pretty difficult when you're shorthanded. And finally, it seems like sometimes when you get all the right ingredients together, it just meshes well. And Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin were assigned that particular cold case. And I have never seen anything. I mean, it just seemed like it just went bang, 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 bang in order. And they were just like bloodhounds on a real strong odor at that time.
Well, they were really dedicated to the case, and they worked it extremely hard. And really, that case kind of set the tone for what we've been able to do with some of our other cold cases. You mentioned technology, and certainly in that particular case, the technology, not only DNA, but the blood spatter technology, was very important. But there was one other case I wanted to mention, and that was the Lynn Oran case. Mm-hmm. And that case was not solved by technology, but it was solved by going back and re-interviewing and doing a lot of good, what I call detective work. Jim Trammell and Mark DiNardo handled that case. And I will tell you that the one thing that we have found is a lot of time is on our side. One thing you do when you go through life, you probably make a lot of friends, but you also make some enemies as you go along. We found that ex-wives or ex-girlfriends are great sources of information in these cold cases. And so we have found in doing these that these cases aren't investigated the same. And it takes a special type of investigator, someone who really lives with the case. And it's a lot different than investigating a case that's happened and you're hot on the trail, so to speak. We're hoping, and I've talked to Bill Sharp yesterday about this, we're hoping to get a coalition of the various departments, both in Rutherford and Cannon County, and kind of form a cold case task force where we can different officers from different departments can kind of pitch ideas back and forth and get different points of view and try to solve some of the cases that are still out there that we feel we've got a good chance of solving.
That's a good idea. And I'm sure that came under your direction.
Well, it's something that Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin, Paul Newman, and I have talked about just in as we've worked these cases. And Bill's kind of been pushing me to do it, so I told him if he would set it up, we'll have a meeting and we'll see if there's any interest along those lines. But I believe it would be a good thing, and I believe that it would be something that would bring about some results. We've got some cases that we're very close to solving. We think they're solved. It's just finding the evidence and putting them together to where we can make the case in court.
He is a ball of energy, isn't he?
He is, yes.
But you are too, because, I mean, how often do you find a DA that when you have to go out of state and interview people on an old case, that the Attorney General goes with you? I mean, that is something that I've always found fascinating, because it's not like you didn't have enough to do in the classroom or in the courtroom.
That's odd you should say that, because I told Sharp yesterday, I said, it's time for a road trip. And he told me, he said, well, as a matter of fact, we have a case that we're working in. We may need to go up to the Northeast. And I said, well, count me in. I want to go.
You know, as Attorney General, you have to stay kind of neutral when you're in there, when you're trying to bring all your evidence in. But the emotions have to be extremely strong when you're talking about a case like the Salmon case. And some of the others, where you're talking about a young lady that was taken very young in life, and it was a pretty much a brutal crime. How do you ever find yourself getting angry and emotional when you're talking to any of the key people that are part of that when the memories go back to the scenes and all those other things that happen?
Well, I will say that when you're in the trial prep mode, it's kind of like a football player. You see them run out on the field and whatever. You do try to pump yourself up. And I think it's important that you have emotion. I think whether you're conscious of it or not, the jury's watching you all the time, and if they get the sense that you don't believe in what you're doing, you're not going to win that case. And I firmly believe the more that you are convinced that you're right, that you are emotional about what you're doing, that gives you the confidence to go in there, and even when things don't go just the way you would like them to, it gives you the confidence to know that you can come back and do the job. And I sometimes have seen this, that as we go along in a case and as the evidence starts to be put before the jury in the case, as you say, we're traveling down that road and building that house, and the evidence starts to mount, you can look over on the other side of the courtroom and you can see the energy going out of that table over there, or the lawyer. You can see the defendant, the confidence in that person's eyes don't look the same as it did on Monday when you were picking the jury. And then that gives you a shot of adrenaline also to know that we're doing something right. So it's very much a drama that's played out in the courtroom. And Paul Newman and I often say to each other when we're in that, this is what we went to school to do. This is where we watched Perry Mason. And certainly there's a lot to be said for that. But you can never let the thrill of the drama overcome your common sense.
Right.
And you can never want the desire to win the case overcome the fact that you don't go in there to win at all costs. You are in there to see that justice is done.
And you can't get overconfident at all.
You cannot get overconfident, and you can't take somebody and persecute them. You've got to prosecute them.
And that's one thing that the jury sees. And a lot of times, I have seen people kind of overlook the importance of the jury. I know you haven't. I know the judges haven't. But you have to spend a lot of time eye contact and talking directly to each and every one of them, because each one of them is as important as the other one. And if you miss out on one, it turns into a mess.
And that's happened. That's happened to us in some cases. I found out, Truman, as you and I have gotten older, I'm learning more every day. Back when I was a young prosecutor, I thought I knew everything, and I found out that I knew very little about people. Everybody doesn't think the way I do. Everybody wasn't raised the way I was raised. They come from different backgrounds, different walks of life, and you can never take for granted that people are going to think the same way or see things the way that you do. Mm-hmm. And when you learn that, it helps you in the courtroom. It help you. You know, you shouldn't make judgments. You should let the evidence speak for itself. Now, you can let that evidence tie into your theory of the case. You should have a theory of the case, but you shouldn't stand up there and make moral judgments, because everybody's morals or ethics aren't the same. And so you should stay away from that. And the only moral that you should have is to seek justice, because whatever that word means, everybody has a sense of justice. And I think it's important that the jury views the state or the prosecutors as someone that's seeking justice, as opposed to a defense attorney who is there to look out for the best interest of their client. So in a way, we feel privileged that we have a higher calling, so to speak. And when you are tasked with that higher calling, you've got to live up to that standard. And so when we go in there, we want to be fair. We want to do everything above board. We want to follow the rules. And if you do that, then everything will turn out, I believe, as it should.
One of the things that the defense and the prosecution argue about a lot of times is in selection of the jury. Have you ever had, and I'm going to say yes, have you ever had cases where after you got through with your voir dire and maybe you're thinking back and you felt pretty good about the ones that have been selected, have you ever been fooled? Because I know that people, when they get in that position, a lot of times, if they have certain causes or whatever, they may think more toward that cause than telling the truth exactly what their thoughts are, so that they can render a different verdict later on.
Well, that's something that we do worry about. We worry about jurors that may have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And I think in the times we live in now, we may see that more. There's so much news. There's so many interest groups. There's so many different issues that people are involved in. And I'll give you an example. Mr. Dotson and I were trying a double homicide case. An older couple were robbed by some young men, and they were murdered. And one of the person that actually pulled the trigger and killed the man and his wife, we were trying that case, and it was a death penalty case. And in picking that jury, we had to, quote, death qualify the jury. In other words, we had to say not will you give the death penalty, but are you capable of considering that mm-hmm. possibility? And we picked a jury, and all of those jurors had said that they would consider that. Well, we found out, and that case broke 10-2, as I recall, for the death penalty, mm-hmm. 2 against. But we found out that one of the jurors actually said in the jury room that he would never, under any circumstances, impose the death penalty.
So basically
he told us a story.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back, you think, boy, we wasted 3 or 4 days there for no reason. And you worry about that happening again. There's nothing you can do about it. Once they're on the jury, they're on there. But that person was not qualified to sit on that jury, and in my opinion, he did a disservice to himself, to us, to the other 11 jurors, and everybody that was involved in that trial by not being honest about it. You know, if you're not in favor of the death penalty, that's fine. But it's the law of the land. The way you change it is not in the courtroom, but through your legislators. And so because of that experience, I worry about agendas. I worry that somebody will say, well, they're picking on this person because of so-and-so, and go and do something where the evidence shows otherwise.
Well, I remember that case well, because I was actually related on both sides in that case. And it was the most unusual case I've ever murder case I've ever seen, because both families, all the families, sit together, and it was the most emotionally disturbing case I have ever seen. We have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Attorney General Bill Weitzel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to ask you how closely do you check into the certification of the labs that present you with DNA data, and how closely do you check out the accuracy of the data that you receive from individuals, even if it's your best friend and you know they're wonderful people? Do you check this information out, and how do you receive certifications, and how do you know the degree of accuracy that you're presenting before a case? And if we have time, I would appreciate it. I'm a little late getting on. If you would comment about the Stand Your Ground law as it applies to Tennessee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. I'll start with the last question first. Tennessee does not have a Stand Your Ground law, so to speak. That's something that's probably unique to each state, and Tennessee doesn't have that. We do have a self-defense law. Obviously, if you're in your home, you have no duty to retreat. But as far as being outside, if you have the ability to get away from the circumstances without having to use deadly force, you're obligated to do that in Tennessee. That would be my reading of our self-defense statute. Now, in regard to the laboratories, we use 99% the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation Crime Laboratory. It goes through rigid certifications on a yearly basis. It's accredited. To my knowledge, I cannot recall being involved in a case where there has been any question about the accuracy of the results from our crime lab. And what you've got to remember is if there is a mistake, that mistake doesn't affect that single case, but it affects every single case that that laboratory would work because it calls into question those results. Let me say it this way. Across the state of Tennessee today, there are thousands of cases involving the Tennessee Bureau of Investigative Crime Laboratory. There are thousands of defense attorneys looking for some way to show that those results are not accurate. So in a way, not only are professionals coming in and certifying the crime lab, but the system itself certifies it, because if there's ever a mistake, I will assure you that every criminal defense lawyer in the state of Tennessee will know about it. So not only do you have a professional certification and standards, but you have a actual day-to-day in reality certification of those results. And the third question I believe you asked was in regard to witnesses and telling the truth, even if you they're your best friend. How do you show that they're telling the truth? Well, there is no test that I'm aware of. You've heard of lie detector tests, other things. There is no test that I'm aware of that objectively shows whether a person is telling a truth or telling a lie. We may all have opinions about that, and certainly in a case in court, the jury gets to determine the credibility of the witnesses. But what you look for is the reasonableness of that witness's testimony, whether that witness has the ability to know or perceive what they're testifying about, how that testimony relates to other witnesses' testimony regarding the facts, and whether there's physical evidence or factual evidence out there that corroborates the testimony of the witness. And all of that is put in front of the jury, and then they decide whether a witness is telling the truth or not telling the truth. And another distinction is someone that would willfully tell a lie as opposed to someone who's simply inaccurate or makes a mistake. I'm not real good with colors, and if someone were to ask me what color a car leaving the scene of a robbery was, I'd give them my best opinion, but knowing my eyes the way I know them, I might be wrong on that color. So that's different from me intentionally trying to mislead someone. But the jury does that. The judge is also there and hears that witness and is able to judge the witness's credibility. And when the jury returns the verdict, the court must accept that verdict. In other words, the judge who's been there through all the trial has to say, well, I believe that the jury has rendered the right verdict. So we have those checks and balances also on the credibility of the witnesses. And remember, that lawyer on the other side is always going to be up there cross-examining them and trying to test that witness's recollection, their accuracy, and things of that nature. So I feel that our system works very well in that regard. Now, when you've got someone that would intentionally lie, that's a different story. And sometimes that's hard to detect.
You know, there's so much evidence in a court trial. And like she was saying, and like you were saying, there all that information has been filtered through. And if there is a conflict in the testimony, it's usually going to come up. I mean, at one point or another, it's going to come up, and or about the accuracy of the particular witness that may be off. But, you know, there, unless you sit in a trial, especially a capital case, and seen all of the evidence that goes through and how it is assimilated, and, you know, a lot of times there's so much that while the jury is deliberating, they will ask for more and more information to make sure that they have got it in order the way it's supposed to be. So everybody is given 110% to make sure that they have the right information to make a determination on that individual. I mean, no stone goes unturned, as they say. It really doesn't.
Well, it shouldn't. And as I stated earlier, you take it very serious because you're dealing with people's lives. And our standard is to see that justice is done, and justice is not sending somebody to jail that didn't do it. Now, we know that has happened on occasion. And that's part of a flaw of any human system. We will never have a perfect system, but I am convinced that our system strives to be as close to perfect as we can get it. And I always tell the grand juries this too. We just finished one. I always say that the reason you're here is because our Constitution says a person cannot be put to trial unless a grand jury made up of their peers determines there's sufficient proof for the case to go forward. It's not that Bill Weitzel gets to decide who gets prosecuted, but the grand jury decides that. So it's a buffer between the power of the state and the citizens.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with Attorney General Bill Weitzel.
So, what if you're walking out to your car after work and it's been matched by a runaway garbage truck? We've got an agent for that. Having your own State Farm agent means having a real person there to help you when things go wrong. So when accidents happen, you've got someone you know who will be there when you need them. I'm Jeannie Allman, and I'm that State Farm agent.
Get to a better State Farm.
I'm State Farm agent Jeannie Allman at 896-2013.
We're talking with Dr. Rishi Saxena, this area's only certified physician in heart CT, about the 64-slice CT scan.
Before you go for heart catheterization because of chest pain or minor abnormality in stress test, you need to consider this non-invasive device to find out about the blockage. Or if you just have risk factor, you're not having any chest pain, you want to find out flag early so you could act on it.
No needles, no pain, it only takes minutes. Call 896-4800. Dr. Rishi Saxena.
Do you ever think much about the energy you use at home? Maybe once a month at the mailbox. Ugh. Well, consider this. There's a program out there called Energy Right from TVA and your local power company that thinks about energy for you. Energy efficiency, that is. Because with the Energy Right program, your home uses far less energy. Particularly when it's powered by a super high-efficiency heat pump and a hard-working electric water heater. In fact, a home fully outfitted with Energy Right features can cost up to 50% less to heat without sacrificing any comfort. 50% less. Now that's something to think about, especially once a month at the mailbox.
I can live with that.
For more information, call your local power company or visit EnergyRight.com.
This is Amy Byers at Murfreesboro Electric Department. For more information on our Energy Right programs, call 893-5514 or visit MurfreesboroElectric.com.
Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes. We're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Paper.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
And welcome back with Attorney General Bill Weitzel. And this part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's, on to Ridgely Road. You know, there are times you know you've done your job, you know, and everything has turned out the way it's supposed to. Do you ever, because of the defendants, do you ever have a sense of remorse a little bit sometimes? Because you know they've committed a crime. A lot of them sometimes are young. They're just. Is it hard to keep those emotions out of your head?
Well, you know, as bad as some people are, and some of the things that people do to other humans. When you're in that courtroom and you look over there, there is a human being sitting over there. Now, you may not agree with what they've done. Obviously, you don't. You're prosecuting them. But, yes, I have feelings for the defendants, and I have often looked and wondered, what was it in this person's life that put them on this path and made them go in this direction? Because they seem like they're intelligent. They seem like that they had an opportunity to do something else, but and you feel sorry for some people in their circumstances. But then on the other hand, there are some genuinely evil people in this world, and I get a great deal of satisfaction when I know that somebody that's genuinely evil goes to the penitentiary and may not ever get out. But the flip side of that coin is, in my experiences and working in the DA's office, I've had the opportunity to help a lot of people, not just the victims of crime, but people charged with crimes, people that made a mistake, people that you give an opportunity to, and they take that, and maybe they do change their life. So that's the other side of it, and sometimes you have to take a chance on that. You have to take a chance on giving a person an opportunity to see if maybe that'll pan out. And the one thing I often do is when you give somebody, some people would say a break, I'm going to say an opportunity, but you give someone an opportunity and they come back and they don't take advantage of it and they're in more trouble. Your initial response is to get mad about it. But then you realize it's not, they didn't do that because of you. They did it because they did it to themselves. And so I guess that's another function of getting older. You don't get mad quite as much. And you say, well, I gave the person the opportunity. They didn't want to take it. I did the best I could do. Unfortunately, they haven't.
That has to be one of the more satisfying things that you do, is the laws are not always set up to prosecute people. They're set up, actually, laws are made for the people in one direction or the other. And when you're able to do that without them going through a court of law, not waste of taxpayers' money, I won't even bring that up. It's just a matter of doing the right thing for a person if you think they're deserving. And it puts the ball in their court. I mean, it really does. It gives them an opportunity on their own to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and go out and do the things that they need to be doing.
Well, one thing that I've heard over the years is you have to treat everybody the same. But I can't get a definition on what the same is, because everybody is not the same. Right. Everybody is different. Everybody has different circumstances. And so trying to be, quote, fair is a very difficult thing to do. And I've found as soon as you set a rigid rule, the next case through the door will be a case that you need to break that rule for. Yeah. So I try not to be rigid. And I try to look at the cases as an individual case involving individual victims, if that's the case, and also individual defendants. And I think if you'll do that, then you are doing your job. If we take discretion away from prosecutors, might as well have a computer down there.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, we use our discretion every day some way or another, and that's true in the criminal justice system also. And I take that very seriously. And I believe if you take your obligation to do that seriously, it's going to cause you to lose some sleep, because you're going to wonder, did I do the right thing in that case? If you're not serious, if you don't care, you can go down there and be a machine. You can make a lot of policies. You can treat everybody the same, and in that process you're going to hurt somebody that didn't deserve to be hurt too.
Yeah, I think you lose something. And you and I, I'm not going to mention who it is, and I loved him to death. He was one of the best judges ever in Rutherford County, but he had set rules.
He did.
They're all cookie cutter, and there was no room to work with, and he stayed on that path for the whole time that he was there for many, many years, and very much respected. But I've always kind of wondered about, you know, there are a number of cases that could have been dealt with a little bit differently. And I love the way that you do it, because, you know, no two people are alike, and you're able to assimilate whether this person is actually deserving or not, or what the situation is. I mean, well, they're all different.
You know, if it were you or I, would we not steal a loaf of bread to feed our child if that's the only means we had to do it?
Sure.
And so are you going to treat that person the same as somebody that's got the money in their pocket and they just go in there and steal just to see if they can get away with it?
Yeah.
A greed motive. So, I mean, we have those things that happen, and that's why it's important to look at the case, look at the individual, their past record, things of that nature, to see what we should do. And maybe it's a great, and I may sound more like a defense attorney now than a prosecutor.
Oh, no.
I don't hear that. But it may be a great ideal that we continue to call our system of incarceration the Department of Corrections. In other words, we're hoping that we can correct the behavior rather than the you know, the state penitentiary of warehousing human beings. But that's always been an ideal, that we can correct people. But I strongly believe this, that the key to correcting people is letting them understand that there are consequences for what they do. And sometimes that consequence is you lose your freedom and you go to jail. And if you are any kind of a person, and if you do have redeemable qualities, then you won't want to go there again. And yet we see people who go there over and over and over again. So you have to balance your situations where you're trying to help someone with the fact they have to be held accountable for what they've done.
Bill, it's been a great day. I have really enjoyed having you on today. I don't get to see you much anymore, and you didn't invite me to go fishing with you.
Well, we'll try to change that next year.
Well, it's been a great day, folks. And in the morning, we'll have Mr. Jeff Jordan on with us at 9 o'clock. And Bill and I were talking about it earlier. It looks like the Tennessee coaching thing is just going to go on and on. It's going to become, maybe go all the way to next year.
Well, with an election coming up in a couple of years, maybe they'll get so bad they'll call me. I believe I could go up there and do some good.
I believe you can handle it. Thanks, Bill. We'll see you guys in the morning at 9.